Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tourism Media Mayhem, the podcast attempting to convince all of you that digital is better than traditional.
Is that our goal, Josh?
That is always the goal.
That's Josh's goal.
So I'm Josh.
I'm Sasha.
And yeah, we're here to fight and talk about marketing.
Yeah.
So today we have a great guest, someone who I've gotten to know over the last couple of months. His name is Mark Everton. He's the CEO of the Seattle Southside Regional Tourism Authority. Mark, welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here, Josh and Sasha. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to have you. I know our listeners can't see you right now, but you are James Bond. That's what we've decided anyway, right? Daniel Craig?
I wish.
The exact haircut.
Or Daniel Crane, whichever side you're looking at, right?
I'm going to show a little ignorance here. Who is Daniel Crane?
He was a sitcom based in Seattle. He used to be on Cheers. He was the right. I don't know what role he played, the older doctor, right? And then spinoff from Frasier Crane.
Frasier,
right?
Yep. So he was Frasier's brother.
This guy,
right?
I just got it. Him.
Right.
Classic. Okay, I could kind of see that.
Mm.
Oh, hybrid, please. Right between the two. Okay, sorry. We're here to talk marketing. Well, Mark, tell us a bit about you and your history. Like, give us a quick bio.
Sure, the quick elevator speech. I've been up in Seattle now for about 6 months. And prior to that, I was running Visit Oakland, the Oakland Convention and Visitors Bureau in Oakland, California. And I did that for about 5 years. And prior to that, for 30 plus years, I ran hotels. And my last gig for 5 or 6 years was being an area managing director with Joie de Vivre. Joie de Vivre was at one point the largest boutique hotel operator in the country. Very similar to Kimpton, both originated in San Francisco. And I was overseeing the Joie de Vivre properties in Hawaii, Southern California, and Silicon Valley while being based out of Oakland. So since our topic today is marketing, I've got a little bit of insight in marketing either for an individual property, destination, and then also on a CVB side. So I'm excited to be here, be able to chat with you guys on Mayhem, a little bit about marketing.
So you've done a little bit of everything then, it sounds like, which is kind of why I wanted to talk to you about all this. So go back to the hotel days, Mark, and talk a little bit about, because I'm sure you weren't doing just marketing. So what did that look like?
So hotels have a focus of being very much in-house. They're primarily looking at what's going to be an advantage to them and how they market their individual property. And they don't necessarily are looking big picture. They're not looking how to market the city. And so when you add the DMO dimension into it and the Convention and Visitors Bureau side, you're asking the hotel to stop being quite so proprietary and start being a little more communal and looking at how do we market that. And so I have had the opportunity, fortunately, to have a variety of different properties that I've worked with, whether it's an urban property, whether it's a resort, whether it's an island-based property, or whether it's an airport property. And so it's interesting to see that while each one has a very distinct and unique audience, and the reason for travel to that property varies, they all are very similar in that they're working in a pretty small pool in trying to build awareness and build an experience that people can relate to at their property. Whether it's getaway, whether it's romance, whether it's corporate group travel, or whether it's just an airport property where you're looking for a warm, safe place to put your head down for the night, pre or post a trip or a flight. So I think it's interesting to see the kind of the juxtaposition between hotels focused on just their four walls and then a DMO or a community-based marketing organization thinking it's not just about the properties. It's a lot more about what's going on in the community.
Okay, so in your time with the properties and the hotels, how often did you interact with your area's DMOs? Well, it sounds like you probably had access to a lot of DMOs based on the number of properties you were managing, but what did that look like?
primarily the two that I interacted the most with were DMOs based in San Francisco and then in Oakland. And so I was on the board of directors for the Oakland Convention and Visitors Bureau, which became Visit Oakland for probably a decade before I took the helm there. Hmm. And it was a great revelation for me to be able to see both sides of it, being on both sides at one point. And I think that's been a benefit for me today to be able to relate to what hotels are looking for. So when a DMO is talking to hotels about marketing the community and marketing the region and pushing or differentiating attributes, and you've got hoteliers that are like, that's all great, but I'm just trying to fill my hotel. You know, I'm struggling to make my star report look better. And can I just get some occupancy at a decent rate? It's an interesting juxtaposition between trying to market and trying to sell. And DMOs invariably are marketing, and hotels are just trying to sell rooms. And mm-hmm. so I've used the word juxtaposition probably more than I should have, but it's an interesting conflict between the two.
Well, it is interesting because I feel like they have the same initiative at the heart of their effort, right? To get people to come, to stay longer, experience more, but may not see it that way, you know, with their immediate initiatives. But it feels like they would just benefit each other, you know, from their efforts.
Agreed. The symbiotic relationship, if it's done right, is really a positive experience. But you've got DMOs that don't sign contracts and don't sell rooms. And then you've mm-hmm. got hotels whose ultimate objective is heads and beds. Sure. And so that's where that, let's work together on this. Mm-hmm. And I'll build awareness for the area. I'll build awareness for your hotel. And then you step in and actually sell the property and talk about your attributes and why people should stay with you, or why they should sign a contract with you, or why they should host a meeting in your property. So you're absolutely right, Sasha. That's the key. And when it's working well, it's beautiful. And when it's not working well, oh my gosh, it's ugly.
Yeah. I was going to say harder, easier to say than to have accomplished, right?
Right. And to add on to that for a little bit, we're just coming out of COVID. So where the conflict and where the challenge really came in is you've got hotels that are absolutely being devastated by COVID because there's mm-hmm. people not traveling. And they're looking to their DMO and saying, you got to get me rooms. You got to find guests for me. And the DMO's perspective is, that's not necessarily my job. I don't find guests. I build awareness of the destination and guests come to us. But you want me to go out and load them on a bus and deliver mm-hmm. them to your hotel. And that's not always an easy thing to do, especially right. for my marketing company. It's easier if you're selling because you can adjust rates and you can do flash sales, things like that, that a DMO can't necessarily do.
Sure.
So that tells me, Mark, that when you're thinking about, well, let's say Seattle Southside Regional Tourism Authority, you're thinking about not necessarily the responsibility just to the hotels, but for the entire destination and focusing on that top of funnel, it sounds like, more so than bottom of funnel marketing.
Absolutely. And I think to make that top of funnel awareness, there are so many pieces that you need to be touching and you need to be working on. But you've got hotels, which are invariably your board members, your stakeholders, the people that ultimately pay your salary, because for a lot of DMOs, your revenue and in turn your operating expenses are covered by heads in beds. And who actually puts the heads in beds isn't the DMO, it's the hotels. So you're beholden to them in a great degree. In a positive way. So you've got to balance that. So with COVID, you got hotels saying, help us out here. So I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing DMOs pivot. I think Destinations International, which is the organization that provides a great deal of resources to DMOs across the country and throughout most of the world, what DI is saying is start looking at your community, start looking at community-based marketing. And that in turn is going to assist your hotels and your other businesses, your restaurants and your attractions. So it's interesting to see us pivot more towards that. And I think COVID has helped facilitate that. I think COVID has got us further along that path than we would have been otherwise. And truly, 2 years ago, 2018, 2019, I mean, things were just singing along. Everybody was banking money. Hotels were full. Life was grand. And then we came to a screeching halt and it caused us to really go back and reassess what we're doing. And I think every DMO, every ad agency, every marketing organization is finding the same thing today. I can't do today what I did in 2018, 2019. and what should I be doing? And I think that's the big question that a lot of us are struggling with.
Way to bring it down, Mark.
Yeah. Well, 2019.
I thought we were having fun here.
We're talking about real stuff, Josh. 2019 was one of the largest years for some of our clients. So, yeah, just as you said, 2019 crushed it, and then 2020 hit and brought everything down.
Yeah. So let's back up just a second, Mark. Tell us about Seattle Southside and how you moved from Oakland to this. And let's tell that part of the story so we can kind of focus the conversation a bit.
Sure. Seattle Southside, interesting DMO, interesting organization. It's made up of three different, very different cities. It's made up of the city of SeaTac, which used to be the name of the airport. For those of you that don't know, they're changing the name to SEA because they think that SEA is a lot more reflective of SeaTac than SeaTac is. So I don't know. I kind of like SeaTac, but we have the city of SeaTac that's dominated primarily by, I think, the fifth largest hotel in the country, about 52 million passengers in 2019. And the adjacent city just to the east is the city of Tukwila. And Tukwila is dominated predominantly by retail and dining and has some lodging, but not nearly the amount of hotels and hotel rooms that SeaTac has, but has the largest shopping mall in Washington. And as you drive around, you're hard pressed to think of a single restaurant franchise store that isn't represented in the city of Tukwila. I'm short of a Hooters and a Red Roof Inn. There is a Red Roof Inn except for a Hooters and a Shoney hotel or motel. I don't think there's anything else that's not represented, which is fabulous because there's truly something for everybody in Tukwila, in addition to an amazing sports facility. And then the third city that makes up the three cities in Seattle Southside is the city of Des Moines. And Des Moines sits right on the water. And I know, Josh, you've had an opportunity to go over there. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. Feels very New England-ish or maybe Central California coast. When I go over there, it feels a good deal like kind of the Carmel Monterey would from a California standpoint. But very much like part of Cape Cod would be on the East Coast. So you have these three cities. You've got stunning natural beauty, interesting kind of rustic Des Moines. You've got the retail dining shopping of Tukwila. And then you've got the airport and kind of the busy commercial hub of SeaTac. And then you sprinkle that with the headquarters for Amazon, Microsoft, T-Mobile, all within about a 25-minute drive. And it's a pretty amazing place to be. I was very surprised when I joined the organization and actually got a chance to learn more about it.
Yeah, what a nice combination.
Yeah, I think to reuse your word from earlier, there's a juxtaposition of each of those cities that then when they come together, it actually kind of creates a whole. I don't think that made sense at all. I was trying to do a circle back thing, but
we're just going to name trying. This episode juxtaposition.
Yeah. That's it. There's your theme for this. Wait a minute. I thought we were in a juxtaposition. There's your title right there.
But yeah, Mark, when we were talking before, you know, one of the things that makes the RTA, yours specifically, very strong is the fact that combined the three cities kind of do make a complete destination, but one on its own might not fulfill the needs of a single traveler.
Exactly. And the three cities see that, which is a really nice thing to do. You know, there are other areas of the country. Palm Springs might be a good example to look at. So you have an organization, a DMO called Greater Palm Springs, that represents six or seven different cities, the city of Palm Springs and Indian Wells and several other cities. And each city unto itself thinks that they're kind of the cat's meow and they don't really need the other cities. And so part of that DMO's challenge is how do we keep them all together as a group and make them all looking at the bigger picture than looking individually? And Scott White down there has done a phenomenal job in being able to do that and make sure that everybody understands the value of it. Here in the SeaTac area, just as a little analogy, I had been there just a short period of time when the city of SeaTac said, hey, we want to run a shuttle. We want to run a shuttle bus from our hotels, being SeaTac hotels, and we want to go over the hill to Tukwila so people can go shop and dine. Because a lot of people come in and they use the hotel shuttles to get from the airport to the hotel, and then they're to some degree stranded unless they go and run a car. And there isn't a strong public transportation system. There is to get from that area up into downtown Seattle, but there really isn't to get to an adjacent city. So the city of SeaTac said, we want to run a shuttle over to Tukwila. And I said, seriously? You're going to pay for a shuttle to take people out of your city to an adjacent city so they can go spend money and that city can generate the sales tax? They said, yes, because they have a an attribute that we don't have. And by playing together, we're better than we would be if we just played alone. And so we're running a shuttle. We're taking SeaTac clients. We're taking them over to Tukwila so they can spend money. So it's a win-win. The clients love it. The airline crews love it because they can go over to Shine and Dop. They could go over and dine and shop.
I didn't even register. I was like, yeah. Uh-huh.
So there's your other title. We could also call it the Shine and Dop juxtaposition, right?
Shining and Dopping in Seattle's right. Outside.
Yeah, no, I bet visitors stay longer in SeaTac because they have more activities. So yeah, that is interesting. It's so nice that they can see that big picture. And great. Plan accordingly. Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk about marketing a little bit. You've been with SSRTA now since February, correct?
Yeah, May, 6 months.
Oh, May. Oh, that's shorter than I thought it was.
I know. Okay. I know. It feels longer. It feels it feels like 8 months, but it's really only been six.
As do most jobs, right? Podcast feels like forever, Josh.
I know, but it's been like since May, maybe.
Feels like 5 years, Josh.
Shut up.
Well, and I think we're going into our second hour on this podcast. Is this how long it's
something like that?
Poor Mark. Yeah. He's like, yeah, this is dragging.
Well, okay. So in the 6 months that you've been there, what are you seeing as kind of the most unique marketing challenge that the RTA has?
Well, and we've talked about this, Josh. One of the main initiatives that we've got going into 22 and future is to change the focus of the DMO around from marketing itself as an entity and marketing the region. And I think I know other DMOs kind of get caught up in that same conundrum, which is my brand is the brand that I'm supposed to be marketing when it's really not. You're supposed to be leveraging your brand to build awareness of your region or of your community or your county, your state, your attraction, whatever it might be. And so that's the focus for us, is to move away from pushing the SSRTA brand. We're actually looking at renaming it and starting to use Explore Seattle Southside, rather than it being the Regional Tourism Authority, which I don't know, I'm not a big proponent of, but I like Explore and it sends the right message. I think the other piece that we're looking at is what can we do for our hotel partners and how do we become a value add partner for them? And interesting story, I was talking to one of my general managers and he told me that his director of sales, his DOS, is not a huge supporter of ours in that she says we don't do much. And coming from a hotel standpoint, I can understand that because the last thing a DOS wants to do is say, wow, you know, I don't do much, but boy, that DMO, they're just killing it. You know, they're sure. doing a great job, right?
Said like, no one ever when you're on that side, right?
right. And so, you know, my brain clicked in. Well, I would expect her to be saying, oh, they don't do much for us. I'm the one that's booking all these rooms and I'm the one that's doing all this great marketing. So on one side, I expected that. But secondarily, I got to thinking, how can we win over these DOSs? How can we get them to go to their regional people or their general manager? Not necessarily say, oh boy, that DMO is booking all the business for our hotel and you don't really need me. But what I really would love them to say is they're bringing a lot to the table. We are successful in part because of them. And so we're working on putting together a program of exactly that. And with COVID, a lot of the properties have lost their boot camps, have lost their training, have lost their ability to help educate their team. And so we're looking at putting together programs similar to what you do, Josh, from a digital marketing standpoint, and bring in experts, both on podcasts and also in person, to say, this is how digital marketing is effective, and this is what you should be doing as an organization, as a hotel, to be taking full advantage of that. And this is why you should respond to Yelp and TripAdvisor comments. And this is why you should, you know, be boosting some of your posts. And this is why it needs to be more organic and less canned. And stop taking pictures of wine glasses on balconies with the sun setting behind them, because everybody else has that, right? Yeah. It's just not, you know, puppies frolicking in the surf are wonderful, but if you're not a beach community, just don't do it. And so our plan is to do exactly that, is to help provide that resource again, so that DOSs could go back to their GMs and say, oh my gosh, that DMO, that Seattle Southside, they're just killing it, man. We love them. They're doing so much for us. So that's the plan.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really neat.
So, Mark, let's take this into media a little bit. I don't know how old you are, but clearly you've been around for a while. You've been doing this for a minute, both on the hotel side and now on the DMO side. I think you probably have a perspective of how different media channels have changed in importance over time that maybe some of us don't have. Not that I'm young, though.
Joshua.
Now I'm making it sound like I'm an infant.
I think what he's trying to say is, given your excellent experience and wisdom, could you share with us what marketing channels you've seen do well that have really, really worked over time? Was that where you were going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now I've offended Mark, and Mark's not going to talk anymore. Great.
Adam, could you move the camera over so I can start talking to Sasha? That may be...
great. Okay, I'll just shut up for a minute and let you guys talk. It's good.
I think we're finding the greatest amount of success with being able to talk from a authentic voice, and that authentic voice comes from primarily influencers and through social media posts that are reflective not of a canned agency-based message, but really more about a visitor, resident, authentic voice. And, you know, I know we had talked a little bit about Oakland, and if we could go back there for just a short period of time,
sure.
We were very successful in augmenting the messaging about Oakland and it being one of the most diverse cities in America. And we were able to leverage that through social media and through influencer and through public relations and reaching out to media channels and pushing that message. And the net result of it was is that we got the attention of National Geographic. And National Geographic in 2018, or possibly 2019, one of the two, 2018 or 2019, chose Oakland as one of the top 20 places to visit in the world, along with Cairo and some other really amazing and places. And they chose it because of the diversity. And we were selected in the culture category. And a lot of people would look at kind of a gritty urban setting like Oakland and say, culture? What the hell kind of culture does Oakland have? Well, there is an amazing amount of culture that goes on in that city. And through those channels, we were successful in getting that message out. And the net result was to get selected by National Geographic is kind of a testament that your messaging worked. So your earlier question, Josh, about the channels, it's any channel you can get an authentic voice to talk about your hotel, your destination, your message, I think is the channel that you should be highlighting.
You built a really strong team at Visit Oakland. We met Sabrina Duenas a few months ago, who's there, and I think she was part of the social media crew, or at least was for a while. And I was really impressed with everything I saw from a branding standpoint for Oakland, and the voice was very authentic. How were you able to tease that out over time? Like, how did you find that voice for Oakland?
Well, part of it was common sense on how are we going to present a message of Oakland that counters what some of the mainstream media's messaging was. It really came about during a period of time that we had a person in the White House that actually called out Oakland several times as being, you know, not a good place. I think he referred to it as, you know, the most dangerous place in America. And so to counter that, you know, you can either go forth and say, oh, no, look at our crime stats. They're not that bad, which nobody really is going to follow. Or you just send out a message that says, no, there is an amazing amount of really interesting things going on in this city. and this is what they are, and let me have the people that are experiencing them tell you that story. And I think that is what Sabrina was very, very good at, as was the rest of the marketing team. And I think we were pretty successful about it. Let me, if I can, let me give you a little story about it. We were a major sponsor with Connect Marketplace pre-COVID, which was in Louisville, Kentucky. And the one of our sponsorships was we got to sponsor the speaker series. And so they had 5 different half-hour speaker sessions or 45-minute speaker sessions with authors and, you know, really well-known people that would come. And it was set up kind of in a theater in the round in the middle of the convention center. And when I was looking at the schedule, I realized that there were only 5, but we had a 6th. And so I reached out to Connect and said, hey, you haven't scheduled the 6th one. And they said, no, the 6th one is yours. You need to be on stage for 45 minutes. You need to tell a story about your city that's going to make people be interested in it. And as you guys are well aware from doing these podcasts, if you were going to stand on a stage for 45 minutes, you're going to quickly run out of things to talk about.
I was just
going to
say, that's a very long time by yourself. Yeah.
So our theme, our brand for meetings was let's meet for real. It was the tagline. Real, you know, the entendres with real was, you know, authentic, real meetings. And so I decided to create a program that I called Real Women, Real Leaders. And I invited our mayor, who's a woman, and the head of the Chamber of Commerce, who's a woman, the head of the African American Chamber, who's a woman, and the head of the Asian Vietnamese Chinese Chamber, who's a woman, and I invited them to come to a roundtable on how women have changed Oakland and how Oakland had struggled for decades. And all of a sudden, it was making huge strides in education attainment, huge strides in growth, in the economy, in taking care of some of the crime issues. And the only thing that had really changed about Oakland was that women were in every key role in the city. City attorney, city manager, chief of police, fire chief, the mayor, most of the council people, every single position of importance was filled with a woman. And so I created a 45-minute, 50-minute, invited them to create a 45 or 50-minute speaker series on real women, real leaders. And oh my gosh, it changed the perception of Oakland by the meeting planners that were at Connect Marketplace. And there were several thousand there. And we heard for months afterwards how amazing that was and why they now wanted to bring their meetings and their groups and conventions to Oakland, because they felt it was a comfortable place and a place that they could recommend. And if you were to ask me, which you probably will, what's a highlight? I think that's a highlight of something that I've done in my DMO career, which was to talk my mayor into coming out there and to do that. And coincidentally, she got to meet the mayor of Louisville, and who was the head of the League of California or the League of Cities in the U.S. He was the head of that, and he got a chance to meet her. And he wanted to come out and meet me and thank me and congratulate me on bringing my mayor all the way to Kentucky to do this speaker series. So
that's awesome. That's really neat. Yeah. It's rare to find a destination that's all woman led in all of those roles. I mean, it is rare to find that. So that's really, really cool.
Well, and to see the success that was going on with it, you know, and it's, and unfortunately I think COVID has caused a lot of, you know, some of that has slowed down a little bit, but it has in a lot of different cities and a lot of different communities. But back pre-COVID, Oakland was on an incredible roll. And I think a lot of it was destined by just this really hyper-intelligent, hyper-focused leadership that Oakland had been able to amass.
That's awesome.
Very cool. So if I were to summarize a little bit of what you said, you lean into, in your marketing, real authentic messages from real authentic voices, and really what that comes down to is storytelling marketing. Like if we were to boil it down, does that sound right?
That's exactly right.
So how did you, this is something I've always, we work with a few hotels here at Relic, and I'm trying to imagine the best way to tell a story from a property perspective. How did you accomplish that?
What I pushed for both the properties that I was directly responsible for and then the properties that I oversaw as an area managing director is to what you just described, Josh, very eloquently, which is storytelling and storytelling with an authentic voice. And one of the ways that we did it is with our staff. A lot of times people feel that a hotel is a commodity, like a fast food restaurant, and the people don't really matter. But in reality, what makes a difference between a mediocre hotel and an exceptional hotel is the staff and the direction that they're being given. And so what we would do is we would focus on telling the staff stories. And that story was what makes them motivated to take care of guests. And guests then would respond to that and want to be a part of that. And we saw our guest scores go up. We saw our social media interaction with the guests go up. So it was a win-win. It's not talking about, you know, your pool temperature and how close you are to the airport and how many rooms you have and when you were recently renovated. That's all commodity talk. Mm-hmm. But if you start talking about, you know, the Maria, or you're talking about Joseph, or you're talking about, you know, the gentleman who's going to park your car who's been there for 35 years and how much he looks forward to coming to work every day, that's a message that resonates with people because they want that. They want people that have a heart of an innkeeper. They want people that care about them if they're going to be staying in a hotel. So that was the messaging.
That makes sense. I think anytime you can tie to an emotional connection, you have a stronger message, right? Than just, mm-hmm. like you said, the commodities or the aspects about your product. Those aren't really what sell. Sometimes maybe, but most of the time it's that human connection. It's the emotion behind it, your message.
Right. And I think recently, if you see Airbnb's ads and VRBO, Vrbo's ads, mm-hmm. they've realized that, you know, you're not just renting a place, you're creating an experience. And I think all of a sudden it dawned on them that successful hotel marketing campaigns have been about that, about how you make that connection. And it's not just about the real estate or about the commodity. So it's not brain surgery. It's, you know, pretty straightforward. What you're looking for is an emotional connection. So tell that story about an emotional connection.
Yeah. Storytelling is hard, though. It doesn't always come naturally, especially if you come from a business background. That's why you hire the right people, right?
Exactly. And I think the agencies that are successful and that are accelerating are those agencies that understand that it's not about pretty pictures. You know, it's not about models in white bathing suits, you know, in the surf. That's not the message that's going to resonate. And it's really more about telling a story that's, you know, that's unique to that destination. It makes people want to go and explore it and experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I think from a distributing that message perspective, I feel like it's easier to do that organically. Through quality content, either through social or through blogs or better just storytelling on your website in general. Distributing it from a paid perspective, I feel like can get a little dicey.
Oh, and there are some awareness tactics, though, that are fantastic for storytelling, like TV, right?
Yeah, that's
Yeah, like
true.
Video formats.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But that's one of the, Sasha, that's one of the big challenges that I face a lot of times, in that we'll do a sponsorship with a trade show for meetings and mm-hmm. groups, and it comes with a full page ad in their publication. Mm-hmm. Now, what picture do you put? What ad do you run that's reflective?
Right?
So how do we build an ad that's storytelling, right? And if mm-hmm. you go through a bunch of these, you know, there's a dozen or so different publications out there. And if you thumb through them and you look at the pictures, invariably the pictures fit one of two models. It's either a middle-aged white guy like me standing on the steps in front of a big square concrete convention center, and they have their arms raised like Joe Montana in the, you know, Super Bowl, and saying, ta-da, like our big square industrial convention center is so different than every other big square concrete industrial convention center.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen
And that's
those
why
ads.
You should come to blank, right? Or it's this really funky picture of, you know, and I'm going to pick on us. We've got a picture of a bunch of people dressed in business attire, and they don't have any shoes or socks on, and their pant legs are rolled up, and they're standing in a tide pool, right? Mm-hmm. And they're acting like they're having a meeting while they're standing in a tide pool, right? And so they're supposed to show that, oh, hey, you can have a regular meeting and get your work done, but you can do it in a setting that's different than what you would normally experience. But really, nobody would ever do that. So really what it's supposed to be is just catching your eye and making you pay attention. So you flipped past the other dozen of those and said, oh, wow, look at these, stupid people standing in a tide pool in their, in their wool trousers and wool skirts. And so those are the two. Neither of them are storytelling. Neither of them are impactful. So as a marketer, our objective is, how do we tell a story on a single piece of paper surrounded by a lot of other single pieces of paper? And how do you stand out, right? Sure. So I haven't figured it out yet. That's why I'm looking for an agency to tell me this. Exactly. This is how you tell a story in 8.5 by 11, right?
You bet. Well, and I think in some cases you just don't tell the full story with your, with one ad. I think the hope is that none of your marketing is as siloed as one channel or one ad, that they are seeing you and your customers seeing you across multiple platforms in different places and piecing that story together, the story that you want to convey holistically. So I think your print ad is just one arm, of that, one branch of that. But I think you guys are absolutely right. You can't tell your story there. And maybe, the goal is to capture attention, or I'll leave that up to the creatives, what's executed there. not my specialty. But yeah, I think holistically you have to make sure. That's why it's so important that they're seeing you in multiple touch points, and the frequency is a little bit higher than just one, that you can convey the story you want to convey. But yeah, it is interesting, and it is quite the challenge for print and some of the static materials.
Right. Well, and if we could go back a second on that. So hotels. So how do you, in a print ad, how do you tell a story about a hotel that's compelling, that makes people pay attention and make them want to come stay at your hotel? This kind of goes back to our earlier conversation. And so showing a picture of your brand or of your hotel from the street, or showing a picture of a standard room, that's got a made up bed, all right? Or even if you show a picture of a pretty balcony with a sunset, it's like you can get that anywhere. There's nothing differentiating about it. And a number of years ago, Hyatt created a program, and you guys may be too young for this, but Hyatt's ad program was of individual people doing extraordinary things. And there's a picture of a bellman standing in a doorway with a pair of shoes, handing you the shoes. And you don't think much of it until you look down and you see that he's barefoot. And so what's happened, and it's happened to me, and I'm sure it's happened to all of you, you travel and you go to get dressed to go to your meeting, and you don't have shoes. You didn't pack them, or you don't have a belt, or you don't have, brown socks to go with your brown shoes. And oh my gosh, it's 7:30 in the morning. I've got to be someplace at 8:30. I can't go buy a pair of shoes at this point. So what do you do? And as a hotel general manager, I lent shoes and I lent my belt out several times in my career when people would call. And so Hyatt built a plan around this, and they said who this person is and why they're giving their shoes to this guest. And so it was back to what you had mentioned, Josh, which was eloquent storytelling with an authentic voice that makes people emotionally connect with your message and with your destination or your hotel.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I remember when we were talking before, we were talking about that Amazon ad that's out right now of an older woman and a younger woman who are neighbors in an apartment complex, and the younger woman's alone in a new place, but they connect over birds, and because the older woman sends her a bird feeder, and it's a beautiful thing. But it had nothing to do with Amazon, really, other than it facilitated the connection between the two.
Sure.
But it was very effective.
A nice story.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
If I could share one other real quick story. So there was a number of years ago, there used to be a program in San Francisco called Hotel Heroes, and people were nominated for a variety of different awards. And then there would be a gala banquet, and everybody would get together, and there would be 1,000 of us. And we would all get together and have a wonderful evening and celebrate these people that were being awarded for just really, you know, there's a Lifetime Achievement Award and an Above and Beyond Award, and I don't remember all of them. And I had gotten nominated at one point and ended up not winning. But while I was there, and I'd been to a variety of these, there was one story that absolutely floored me. And to this day, I still get choked up, and I may get choked up telling you this story. It is at a very large hotel in downtown San Francisco. It might be the Palace, or it might be the St. Francis. I'm not sure which. And there's a housekeeper who's been there for 30 years. And the housekeeper has enough seniority that she has assigned a section of rooms, and that section is her section. She basically owns that. So those are the same rooms that she's always servicing. She's always attending to. And an elderly couple check in. And I think the night of their arrival, the gentleman is having chest pains, and he gets taken by ambulance to the hospital and has to go through, I don't think he goes through a bypass, but I think they put a stent in. And he was in the hospital for probably 5 or 6 days. The challenge was his wife was in the hotel room, and she was 100% disabled, was not able to care for herself at all. And she was now, in essence, abandoned because her husband was at the hospital and unable to provide any support. And so it became a really interesting situation. Unbeknownst to the hotel and unbeknownst to the hotel manager, this housekeeper would come by every morning and would feed and provide breakfast that she would make at home to this woman. She would bathe her and dress her, and then she would come and have lunch with her with food that she had prepared at home and brought in. And then at night, she would repeat the same process and tuck her into bed, and then would start the same process again the next day. And she made a trip out to the hospital to let the husband know that she was caring for his wife and that he didn't need to worry about it. And she did this for 7 or 8 days, completely unbeknownst at all to the hotel. And the gentleman recovered and came back to the hotel, and then he and his wife were able to continue on their journeys or return home or whatever it was. But just a phenomenal, phenomenal story. And I don't think they ever marketed that. I don't think they ever publicized it, but it just has always stuck with me in my mind that we're not a commodity. We're not a fast food restaurant, that there is real honest to goodness, serious emotionally attached people in our industry. And it's what makes our industry such an amazing place to work and interact with.
What a sweet story.
Yeah. Wow. We don't get emotional on this podcast very often. No. Unless it's anger. So that was a good change of pace.
That was sweet. I know. What a memorable story. Like, there are just good people all over the world. But you're right. The people are what make a difference anywhere you go.
Right.
Well, and when you come back from a vacation, you're often not talking about the cool things you did. You're often talking about the impact that others had on you. Oh, I met this cool guy at a bar, or we ended up hanging out with this couple on the beach, or whatever. And
yep,
that's, yeah.
Well, that's like our relationship, Josh. That's how we met, right?
It's true.
You were looking for a cool guy at a bar, and you happened to bump into me.
Fate.
good times. Okay, we've kept you for a long time here, Mark, so we should try to wrap up here soon. But a couple, like, rapid-fire media channel questions for you.
Okay.
This is like a hard pivot from the emotions earlier. In your historical experience, I'm going to just make it awkward again. Is there anything that you've done from a media buying perspective that you just would not do again? You would say destinations or hotels should just stay away from that. It's not worth it.
Recent one is we moved away from Adopt a Highway. I'm not sure putting our brand name on highway signs is necessarily the right market for us, or the right marketing tact. I think it works better for a more recognizable brand name, Pepsi or Roto-Rooter or something other than your destination, your DMO's brand name.
Why is that?
Simply because people are driving down, you know, the interstate freeway at 70 miles an hour, and they see, you know, whatever it might be, you know, Seattle Southside Regional Tourism Authority, or Visit Durango, or, you know, Explore Provo. And it's like, what? There's no call to action. It's just But if you're driving by and you see, you know, McDouble with cheese, or you see, you know, Roto-Rooter, you know, you invariably, I mean, Sasha, you've done that. You know, you punch your husband in the shoulder and say, see, there is a solution to our problem back home. It's Roto-Rooter, right?
Exactly.
Are you implying that Sasha has a lot of plumbing problems?
No.
No, you took it there, Josh. You took it there.
See, I think juxtaposition is the perfect name for our episode.
Oh, man. Okay. On the opposite side of the coin, Mark, is there something you've wanted to try that you would like to see Seattle Southside do next year?
We need to get our story out, going back to the authentic story. So something that we have not had a lot of experience, and we're just now moving into that realm, are more influencers, more bloggers, more people that can talk about us, because we're kind of a undiscovered gem, I think, in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the plan, is to use more, enlist more people to tell a story that would be of, that would resonate and be of interest to people.
Yeah, we actually have a sister podcast called Influencer Marketing for Destinations. That's awesome and talks all about influencers. This is a great, great channel to take advantage of next year.
Yes. Okay, Mark, we've talked about a lot of stuff today, and I think it's been a really great conversation. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you feel like other destinations or properties could learn from you?
I don't know if there, I have a lot more to share. I think that one of the things, as we come out of COVID, I think every organization, every destination should look at the resources that they've got. They should look at their ad agency, their marketing firm, and they should make sure that they're aligned, make sure that they're looking at things differently. I don't think anybody can continue to do the same thing that we've been doing. I think everything needs to be turned over. Everything, not necessarily changed, but I think everything should be looked at and said, if this is what we've been doing, should we continue to do that? Because the landscape has changed. And I want our organization to do the same thing. I want us, some of the people that Ashley and Megan, who've been with us for quite a number of years, and it's an opportunity for them to look at what they're doing and say to themselves, you know, is this the best? Can I be doing differently? Can I be doing more? Can I be doing something unique? And I think it's important for every destination to have that Q&A with themselves as they go into 22 and in the future.
Yep, very important.
I think that's great advice. Ashley and Megan are awesome, by the way. Yep. I had a great time getting to know them.
They are. I'm blessed. They're absolutely wonderful people. In addition to being amazing at what they do. So every day's a great experience for me.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so nice to hear from you.
Thank you, Sasha. It's been wonderful to be with both you and Josh. So you guys are amazing at what you do. And thank you for doing these podcasts.
It's grateful.
A great way to get the voice of our industry out and kind of reconnect with people. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Josh? Where can people find us?
Well, you can see more of our story on TikTok, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, see ya.